Hi, I'm Ralph Powell. On the 5th and 6th of June 2024, I'll be speaking at the largest AI event in Asia, Super AI, in Singapore, at the iconic Marina Bay Sands. Alongside brilliant minds like Edward Snowden, Benedict Evans, and Balaji, I'll be on stage exploring the extraordinary potential of AI and the profound change it represents, not just for financial markets, but also for the world as we know it. With over 5,000 attendees and over 150 side events, Singapore will become a vibrant AI hub for a full week from the 3rd to the 9th of June. So visit realvision.com/superAI to register and join me with 20% off tickets with the code REALVISION. The link's in the description.
Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing, where our team of journalists analyze the most important events of the day within the framework of key Real Vision themes, macro, market structure, retirement, and economic history. We cover it all. I'm Ed Harrison, and let me say, we've started this briefing format because we felt you needed a timely update in this time of crisis. We have no idea how long the crisis will last, and therefore how long the daily briefing will last. But we all appreciate, and I especially appreciate, your feedback and kind words about the usefulness of these reports.
That was then, this is now. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing, live from New York City. This is a special edition. We are celebrating episode 1000. We are wrapping up our two-week series. We finished a day of workshops. And we have no other than Kevin Kelly, co-founder of Delphi Digital, with us. So it's going to be a fantastic show. Welcome to all of you. And guess what? We're not alone. You can't see them, but we have some RVIPs with us because we're getting ready for an event that's going to happen here right afterwards. So we got a lot of fun stuff planned. So behave yourselves, everybody. And Ash Bennington's here, too. Hey, Kevin, how's
it
going?
That's one person who's not going to behave himself.
No, already. We've already had mayhem.
Yeah, we've already gone through it.
No, but we're super psyched to have you here. And it's such a great time. We were just talking ahead of this that, my gosh, first of all, so much has changed 1,000 episodes in from where we were with both macro and crypto. I mean, the depths of the pandemic is when we launched this, and we've seen huge changes, huge volatility, big happenings in both macro and crypto, and you've cross-straddled both. So just kind of give us a set the table for us. What are you seeing right now, and what are you hearing from people?
Yeah, I think it's great context too. 1,000 episodes. First off, congratulations, because that's incredible. And I do remember when this had launched, right? And as you mentioned, the depths of the pandemic. Amazing how far we've come. Amazing how different the kind of regime is right now that we're in. I think the last time I was on this program was probably 2 or 3 months ago. I think it was towards the beginning of December. Mm. And we talked a lot about global liquidity, how that has impacts on not just crypto and risk assets, but broader markets more broadly. And so to be honest, you know, that is still very much the heart or the crux behind how we kind of set our outlook for different asset classes. And again, we cover primarily crypto and digital assets, but macro is a massive part of that, right? And I think there's a lot of correlations you still see between crypto and Bitcoin and stocks, for example, because all those macro headwinds way back in the day are now, you know, big tailwinds, and liquidity is, you know, obviously the biggest one of that. So rather than kind of reinvent the wheel, I think in terms of where, if we fast forward to where we are today, I think what's interesting is just check the markets. We're closing for another kind of weekly all-time high, right, in the S&P 500. Risk continues to perform really well. We have seen a bit of a plateauing, I would say, in the liquidity indices and the liquidity indicators that we track. That really started probably 7-8 weeks ago. And typically you tend to see stocks and risk assets, they can perform pretty well in the weeks after that. Mm. I think that might be, if we're thinking about, you know, risks that we had in the Q2, that might be one of the bigger ones. If we do see a continued kind of slowdown or even contraction in some of those liquidity indices, that could cause some volatility as we head into Q2. But I mean, so far, absolutely no complaints with how the start of the year has gone. And I think the start of the year has gone pretty closely to how we expected it. You know, last time I was on, we were talking about what the big factors would be that would be driving the market at this point.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Do you feel, so you still see a correlation, because that's come up, right? We've seen a lot of changes. We saw the Bitcoin ETF, and people are kind of saying, okay, is this still kind of in lockstep with the triple Qs, with the NASDAQ in particular, and risk assets, or are we starting to see a differentiation? You kind of feel like it's still that kind of correlations in place?
Yeah, if you zoom out, the correlations are still pretty tight. I would say if you zoom in the last couple of weeks, we've definitely seen a bit of a divergence. I mean, this week, for example, you had Bitcoin just in the last 10 days or so reach new all-time highs, break above 72,000, 73,000, has since pulled back quite considerably. And as we've talked about many times, these types of pullbacks aren't uncommon, even during bull markets, right? Mm-hmm. They're necessary, healthy resets more often than not. So we have seen a bit of a divergence more recently, because as we mentioned, stocks continue just to, you know, plow higher. But I do think those big kind of tailwinds, those drivers, are still very similar. I think what's interesting is when you chart, for example, you know, last time we talked about Fed liquidity and the PBOC in China really being the two big central banks, right? That not to say they're the only ones, right? But I would put them in the camps of being the most important ones. When you put those two and their liquidity against the price of Bitcoin, for example, the correlation, even just over the last 3 years, is extremely positively correlated. What was interesting is that as you started to see those two kind of plateau on the liquidity front, that was right around the exact time, second week of January, when these ETFs launched, right? Which created a whole new kind of wave of hype and excitement and lots of inflows after we got through some of those GBTC outflows, lots of daily inflows into those funds, which I think helped kind of boost or pull some of that demand forward, push Bitcoin to new all-time highs. Now we're seeing a bit of that kind of unwind, or a bit more, you know, price consolidation, which isn't, again, uncommon when we get back to, you know, all-time highs in previous cycles. You typically tend to see this type of volatility around this point.
Yeah, and I want to talk about volatility. We have the halving coming for those. So we know this audience, we've got a really broad group of people. We have some people who are deep into crypto and have been watching it, have been very happy with how their portfolios are looking. We have people who aren't in it yet but are wondering, because now it's an ETF, right? So suddenly this conversation's different. And then we have people who still have a lot of, I think, worries or concerns. So we're going to sort of cross the board for everybody. And if you have any questions, put them in the chat. I'm not saying it's going to be as smooth as usual, but we're going to try. I got my computer here. We're going to try to see. I'll see how many I can get to. First off, what about the ETFs? How are you feeling about how has that changed the game, if it has at all?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is there's a lot of discussion around whether or not that would be a sell the news type of thing when they were approved, right? And like we've talked about, I think there was a lot of anticipation of these, which created a lot of hype and obviously positive price appreciation in Bitcoin and broader crypto leading up to it. The flows themselves, though, were very difficult to argue that those were priced in, because by definition, they hadn't happened yet, right? So when those initially got launched, we said, depending on where these flows come in, if they come in above expectations, right, if there is more demand for this, we see more net inflows than the market's expecting, that should have positive effect on, you know, the price of Bitcoin. And what you can see is since they've launched, and this is why everybody now is basically tracking those daily net flow counts, right, and staying up late, because a lot of those numbers, especially for IBIT, don't come in until I think 9 or 10 o'clock at night, is seeing where those flows kind of shook out during the day, is because it's created very strong correlations with, you know, whatever that net flow is during that day. Usually that's what happens with Bitcoin's price, right? So it's kind of changed the dynamic of what I think a lot of people are looking at or focusing on in the short term. What I will say from a kind of broader perspective is what I think these ETFs did is not only added more credibility, more legitimacy to this emerging asset class, if you want to call it that, it also kind of serves as a forcing function for traditional investors, institutions, RIAs. Not to say that everyone's going to start plowing into this just because these vehicles are available, but it almost is a forcing function for you to have an informed opinion on it, right? Mm. Not to say you come out of that due diligence process like you would with any other type of asset, or you're thinking about reallocating from maybe, you know, treasuries to stocks to, you know, commodities. Not to say you come out with a bullish take or that is an allocation decision you want to make, but it forces you to actually do the work now at this point, I think. It's no longer okay, or you could argue that kind of ignorance around not having some type of
opinion on it. Yeah, I'm just not going to deal with it. It's like
those excuses kind of have started to evaporate. And then I think the ETF launching was the last kind of big one that makes a lot of those excuses no longer really acceptable, right? Especially if you're, you know, investing with an RIA, for example, you want them to have an opinion on, you know, if you're coming and saying, hey, should I get into Bitcoin? You can no longer just say, hey, it's crypto, some type of scam, or insert some type of excuse here. I think it was a forcing function. And that's just based on conversations we're having too. I mean, some traditional institutions you wouldn't think would be interested in this space, or even some RIAs that, you know, maybe we were trying to talk to or pitch our research to, for example, you know, 12 months ago. Now that they have a way in which they can actually, you know, get into this space, we're seeing a lot more increased interest, right, from those types of players. And I also think it coincides at a time when this currency debasement narrative that we've talked so much about, especially on Real Vision, mm-hmm. and Ral and I, you know, and Ash, every month we talk about these types of things, that's also becoming much more, it seems like becoming much more front and center for a lot of big institutions. A lot of investor circles are talking about the unsustainability of the debt profile of the U.S. And the U.S. isn't the only one going through this, but obviously it's much more front and center being here. Treasury debt increases, the expectations for fiscal deficits, even when we're not in recessionary times, what that means for eventually if the Fed has to come back in because more debt requires more U.S. dollar liquidity to basically service it. There's all these conversations that really strike, I think, at the heart of what the value proposition of Bitcoin has always been, in our opinion, which mm-hmm. is that currency debasement narrative. And so there's a confluence of things, I think, with these ETFs launching that really pulled forward some of that demand in the short term, but really has put that in front of a lot of investors who otherwise probably wouldn't be talking about this or wouldn't be kind of doing the work to figure out if they should have a position in it or not.
Well, the fact that you're getting incoming from those kinds of people, I think that speaks volumes, you know, short-term price action aside, about the longevity. Would you say that there is less skepticism? Well, let me put it this way. Mm. Does it feel like we are in a different cycle now, based on the fact that you now have this starting to be accessible, albeit through an ETF?
I would say when it comes to the cycles themselves, I still think crypto is going to be very cyclical over time. I still think we're going to go through these kind of winter type of bear market periods, right? Hopefully not as prolonged as the last one we just saw, but you're going to see 40, maybe even 50 plus percent drawdowns at some point, right? Especially just given how volatile this asset class will continue to be. So I think it'll still remain cyclical. What I do think is, given this is the first cycle, at least in my experience, where those big kind of macro narratives we were just talking about, currency debasement obviously being front and center, mm-hmm. are now coming to a head at the exact moment when you now have the vehicles in which institutions can get into this space. And also the argument for Bitcoin it's arguably never been stronger than what we're seeing or we're going through and experiencing right now. Now, that's not to say when it comes to skepticism, right? It's not to say that prices are going to go up and to the right forever, right? That could be Bitcoin, that could be stocks, could be every pretty asset class that's outperforming.
NVIDIA,
right now.
We get this question all the time on
right,
NVIDIA.
Right, exactly. And so it's not to say, again, you're not going to have these drawdowns, you're not going to have these cyclical periods, but I do think we're in a bit of a different paradigm this cycle than we were previous cycles, for sure.
Do you think that the institution, so first of all, I can't imagine, I would love for you to put in the chat if you've asked your advisor or you've contemplated yourself whether this should be in your portfolio or not, because I can't imagine that's not going to be a conversation that every RIA or, you know, financial advisor is not going to have to think about, in the same way they people get, especially if they get nervous and ask about gold or mm-hmm. another or bonds. This has got to be something that's going to come up as they hear about it. And yep. it doesn't help that we've had the gains. So I'd love to hear if you're a lot of you who have not been in it are thinking about that. Do you think that is, even though the price is going to be volatile, do you think we're just going to continue to see those institutional flows come into this space? Is that just on a steady climb now? Or do you think that will peak and valley along with the volatile price
yeah,
action?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think overall, for looking out the next, call it 6, 9, maybe 12 months, let's call it through the end of the year, I think those flows will net continue. Again, you're gonna have days or weeks or even multiple weeks in a row where you see outflows just like any other, right? You look at the SPY, you look at TLT, you look at any other ETF, right? And that can be based on just, again, allocation decisions and the individual strategies of who it is that is investing in these. I do think that, and I think it's also potentially going to be a bit more correlated with, as you have more institutions come in, typically you tend to see institutions they're more like those giant kind of oil tankers, right? That when they start to move, they don't move fast. When they start to move, they move with a lot of momentum, right? And they come in.
It displays a lot of water.
Right, exactly. They come in usually in size, right? And so what we know is, yes, there are some that have already come in, but a lot of them either haven't had the ability to do it yet or are still formulating their thesis around now there is a way to do it, that it's one of the reasons why I think going into Q2, maybe more so back half of the year, Q3, Q4, as more institutions come around to and build their own thesis, form their own thesis around this, they have the vehicle to do it. Some of those inflows will come in because they're not the fastest movers in the world, but when they do move, they come in size.
Have you guys seen any interest from corporates? You know, that's still an area where people have to, you know, hedge currencies. They have to think about all that stuff. They have global operations. Have you seen any interest coming in from them?
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break right now to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you been using Mint to manage your finances? First, the bad news. Mint is shutting down. Now the good news. There's a better alternative. Monarch Money. Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and saying they're loving it. Have you been frustrated with personal finance apps that are cluttered with ads, difficult to use, or rarely updated? So was Monarch. They built a new kind of personal finance app that's intuitive and powerful and ad-free and constantly improving based on customer feedback. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all of your tags and categories. Unlike other personal finance apps, Monarch's simple, intuitive design makes it easy to set up, customize, and use. Monarch has built-in features to collaborate with your partner, family, or financial advisor. Invite them to your account at no extra cost, and they'll get their own login info and a joint view of all your finances. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, set goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. That's monarchmoney.com/vision for your extended 30-day free trial.
Good news and bad news. First, the bad news. Mint is shutting down. The good news? There's an even better alternative. Many Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, cash flow, net worth, and more. Plus, create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all of your tags and categories. It's the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving the product. They release updates every 2 weeks and allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. After reading the reviews, I can see why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. That's monarchmoney.com/vision for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/vision.
Yeah, not so much directly. I mean, you've got obviously your MicroStrategy, probably the most quintessential example of that, right? Which is a company that basically got turned into a Bitcoin ETF proxy in a sense. You've got other companies like Tesla, et cetera. I still think that Bitcoin, small allocation can make a lot of sense. It's still very volatile. I think the skepticism there, especially for corporate treasurer, is probably around the opportunity cost of just sticking your capital in, you know, a money market fund, or you're getting, you know, 4.5 on a T-bill. Like that is still, with rates where they are, I think maybe creates a bit of a hurdle for getting into a volatile asset like BTC. So directly, no, but I would not be surprised if there are a lot more corporates that are now, it's at least on their radar.
Yeah, right? I would think it'd be irresponsible.
That's kind of the big thing, right, with RIAs, corporates. It's not to say, again, that they're all coming in at once. It's this big flood of institutional capital, or call it non-crypto native capital in a sense. It's now all of a sudden going to come in because these vehicles exist. It's more that it's now on the radar. You have to kind of keep track of it. You have to do the work to formulate a thesis mm-hmm. around it. And maybe when the opportunity is ripe, let's say Bitcoin takes another 20-25% drawdown, maybe the new dip buyers might be some of these institutions, right? Or some of these RIAs, or some of these eventually corporates potentially. It's more so that it has to be on the radar of a lot more players, investors that I think can give it, you know, the legs in terms of flows throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah. Thanks for all the well wishes in the chat, everybody, by the way. A lot of congratulations on episode 1000. We appreciate that. And one of our contributors, David Slusher, is in the chat, which we appreciate you showing up. Charles asking, hey, guys, what's your take on the end of this cycle? Like, we're already talking about the end of the cycle, Charles. Will this time be different because of ETF inflows? We talked about that a little bit, but what do you make about the fact that we're talking about the end of the cycle already? Is that conditioned for people who've been through this before?
Yeah, it's a great question, because it's a question we're getting a lot more of right now too, right? Especially
is that a sentiment indicator?
Which is interesting, because once you get to all-time highs, you would think that's usually kind of the start of the next leg of the cycle, right? But again, I think just given even being in this, for years and years now, I'm always surprised at how fast crypto can, the drawdowns of crypto can be, and even the upside, right? How swift those moves can be and how volatile it can be. So I think part of it is just near-term sentiment getting a bit over its skis. You have seen a pretty sizable increase in leverage in terms of open interest, funding rate. So even on the kind of trading side of things, there's definitely a number of indicators that have pointed to this being a very logical place for us to see some consolidation. Which again, very natural and something that we would expect and actually something we would want to see, right? Because prices can't go up forever. I do think that this cycle will continue. I wouldn't say we're in the first inning or first or second innings by any means at this point. We were way back when we started talking about this after liquidity bottomed. But what's interesting is if you look back at prior cycles, things like this meme coin craze, right, which we can get into, and there's all sorts of takes on both sides of whether or not that's, good for the space, that's just good for people or society in general. What's interesting though, if you just kind of take a step back, we've seen meme coins before. There's, you have your original ones that have been around for as long as Ethereum has at this point. And what you typically tend to see is they're proxies for that most kind of pure speculative gauge, right, of sentiment and also inflows. And last cycle, for example, wasn't actually until Bitcoin broke to its new all-time high, saw a little bit of consolidation. That next leg higher in the bull cycle was really where you saw more of this kind of alt season, right? Mm-hmm. Or non-BTC assets really starting to outperform. So that's kind of right in line with what we've already been seeing. It's tough to kind of put yourself in that position 12 months from now. And hindsight will always be 2020. But no, I don't. Short answer is no. I don't think this cycle is over. And I look at these kind of drawdowns as opportunities if you have the cash on the sidelines to.
Well, and it's going to be interesting because now more people are watching, and we have an entire generation that is schooled on, if things are running away, waiting to get a better opportunity to go in. So we don't know how many people wanted to see how the launch went and are waiting now. And if you get a pullback, we'll think about going into it or having that conversation with their, nobody wants to chase anything higher, right? And so if you miss that.
Absolutely. And it's the same thing with stocks, right? So if you look back at, historically when the S&P 500, for example, has gone through some type of significant bear drawdown, when it breaks into all-time highs, the 12 months after that actually typically result in above average returns and below average volatility. So, and it seems a bit counterintuitive, right? This is where the psychological aspects of investing can really hurt people sometimes, is when it breaks to an all-time high, any type of asset, typically that's strong momentum. That's in your favor. That's a good thing. You typically tend to see above average turns after that happens. But sometimes it's hard to, again, put yourself in that space because you're thinking things have already run up so much.
Right.
We're now quite literally at all-time highs. Like, how much higher can things run? And sometimes you can be surprised at just how long and how high things can go.
We talk about this all the time when we do the psychology of trading. And this is a huge overhang, I think, from the .com for those who got caught up in that. You don't want to be the fool, the last one in. It's usually retail. But we talk a lot about strategy with the traders, Tony, Jared. Tony's going to be here later. And just pulling that right side of the screen out a little bit further. Raul always talks about Jared, talking to him about that. So you're right. It is tricky.
Yeah.
And you always have to know your risk profile when you know the money, when you need the money. You know, that goes without saying. Always.
Absolutely.
We're talking
and I think
about
having,
stuff here.
Having a process. Well, it's why having a process is so important and why the work that all of you do here. And again, I've known Raul for a long time now, and he's informed a lot of my own views on certain things. Mm-hmm. Why having a process is so important, because you can make the flip side of the argument, right? If we're going to say the cycle is topping out, well, what are the things that we would look for that tell us that this cycle or things might have gotten too over their skis and we are, you know, in for 6, maybe 12 months of downward price action? We'll talk about risk assets specifically, right? And it would be if you were seeing, you know, global liquidity not only topping out but contracting, your outlook, the expectations for liquidity going forward were down and to the right. On the opposite side, we're really kind of seeing potentially what could be the early innings of a global central bank rate cutting mm-hmm. cycle, right? So our liquidity outlook and the outlook for rates right now doesn't tell us that we're, you know, near an all-time high, at least compared to prior cycles. Are there risks around inflation still being sticky, the Fed coming out and saying, okay, we thought we were going to do 3 hikes, we updated that plot 3 months from now, maybe the argument about rolling off QT gets extended a little bit because they actually have the ability to do that? Those are things that certainly can play into short-term volatility or can cause people to de-risk and take some chips off the table. But when it comes to those kind of bigger, broader cycles, the big things that we would look for that tell us both where the bottom is happening, it's never perfect, right? You never time the market perfectly. When the bottom is roughly probably going to happen, where that new cycle top is, we're not seeing anything that tells us that we're at those kind of egregious levels yet.
Ralph asking, do you have any thoughts about the launch of, you want a drink, you can get it.
I'm going to do it, yeah. I told you.
I don't want to.
I'm like a
fast
camel
and,
when it comes to
Fast
comes
and
to
furious. We're all
yeah.
We're all also dying. It's allergy season here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're suffering where you are, but.
I'll just keep it in my hand the whole time.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll get you something stronger in a little bit. Ralph asking, does Kevin have any thoughts about the launch of BlackRock's money market-like fund and their investment in Securitize?
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing. You've heard the headlines. Inflation is unchecked. The dollar is collapsing. The government is printing too much money. The fear is real, but there is a solution: gold. The government can't print more gold. Gold isn't collapsing, and gold's value increases during inflationary times. Noble Gold Investments is here to help you protect your wealth. Noble Gold Investments is the gold IRA company that Americans trust. The founders of Noble Gold have more than 20 years of combined experience in buying gold and silver. They've secured more than $1 billion in precious metals for their clients. Whether you're a seasoned investor or new to the game, Noble Gold Investments simplifies and secures your gold investment journey. Choose between a tax-advantaged gold IRA or have physical gold delivered to your door. Noble Gold Investments ensures a seamless and easy transaction. Invest in something you can hold. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com/vision to get started. Don't wait. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/vision. Few investments make a better long-term hedge against inflation, depression, and economic downturns than precious metals like gold and silver. Plan for the inevitable and protect your environment savings with a gold-backed IRA from Noble Gold Investments. Noble Gold Investments is the gold IRA company that Americans trust. The founders of Noble Gold have more than 20 years of combined experience in buying gold and silver. They have secured more than $1 billion in precious metals for their clients. Gold remains steady when inflation is on the rise and the dollar is in turmoil. Its value doesn't just hold, it increases during inflationary periods. And unlike money, gold can't be printed. It's your shield in times of economic uncertainty. Invest in something you can hold. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com/vision to get started. Don't wait. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/vision.
I think it's a really significant event. And I think Larry Fink was on, I forget what it was, maybe CNBC earlier this week, talking about how the Bitcoin ETF and I don't want to directly quote him, but I think he said something along the lines of the Bitcoin ETF is really just the start of what their plans are. And so this whole concept of tokenizing assets, right? Mm-hmm. This technology can be used to create efficiencies for the traditional financial system that doesn't necessarily have to be entirely decentralized in and of itself. And what I mean by that is this technology can be used in different ways that can bring those efficiencies that doesn't have to be very kind of degen, DeFi type of styles or type of opportunities. So I think it's a big deal. I think one thing that we've seen with the tokenized treasury products that already exist, right? Because they're not the first, they're definitely the most notable. And I think one of the risks to some of those other platforms potentially is the fact that you have now a BlackRock who comes in. This was always kind of the risk for trying to go after tokenized assets, was that the ones who actually have all the assets were going to come in and do this themselves.
Yeah. Right?
What we have seen is a pretty big explosion over the last 12 months in the AUM or the assets that are in these tokenized funds, because that demand for dollar yield certainly has been pretty high, especially when if you're in crypto and you're not fully deployed, but you don't necessarily want to leave the crypto space. You don't want to take money out, put it in a bank, then have to go into a money market fund. The ability for you to kind of keep, let's say, capital within the crypto ecosystem, but get exposure to right now pretty attractive, dollar-based yields. I think it's a big deal both for that space, but also just the future of what tokenized assets can look like. Because again, BlackRock wouldn't be doing these types of things if they didn't know things that we don't, right? Yeah. I mean, that's
when they're the 800-pound gorilla in the room,
right?
I've seen a lot.
And their success rate on not just like new ETF approvals, but new product approvals. I mean, I think it's something. It's like 500-1, right? It's like it's absolutely insane. Yeah. So,
By the way, if any of the language we're using, if it sounds unfamiliar to you, there was a time when options and ETFs did too. This is just what happens as these financial markets get more sophisticated. All of us as consumers have to learn what this is and whether we want them in our portfolios or not. I mean, that's true. The Nigerians were on talking about being floor pit traders in the 1980s. And, the number of options, there were only quarterly options. And they were,
right.
it was only for professionals. Individuals did not have access to it. And now it's this huge world.
0 day.
Yeah. Expired. I mean, yeah. So all of this stuff, and the same thing, you would only buy stocks. ETFs weren't, didn't exist.
Yep.
We can't imagine that time. It just sounds so familiar to us. But this will be the same with all of this. And, that's why we're always leaning into the education, because we all need to know whether these are things that we need to have in our portfolio or not. It's not
absolutely
isolated to just people who are playing in this world. It's going to be mainstream.
And it's overwhelming, I think, for all of us.
Yeah.
I think it's also why, having a process and having an understanding of what you're in, you're never going to catch all of the best trades all the time.
Yeah.
There's always going to be somebody who's outperforming you. There's always going to be somebody who's blasting it all over Twitter or X who's outperforming you, or they're in something that you're not. So, to your point, understanding what these are, getting educated on them, and then figuring out if they fit into your plan, right, or what your goals are.
Yeah, and go to people and go to people who know what they're doing and have experience in this. Not especially in this newer stuff, not necessarily someone that you don't know in Twitter. By the way, I know Delphi stuff is on the marketplace now,
yep,
which we're super excited about. So you can go to the marketplace to check out people that we know that we deal with that can be relied on as you try to build your education in this. So we're super pumped about that. Great question here. Aside from Bitcoin and ETH, what other protocols would you say have absolutely solidified themselves in the crypto sphere? So we know Solana took off and did amazing. And there are, there are some names some of us know, more of us know. There's some names that it's, as you say, hard to keep up with. Ash.
I didn't want to call him out.
It was inevitable. It was inevitable.
It had to happen at some point.
He's getting too excited because we're talking about this.
He heard Solana. This is like.
But seriously,
it's a really good question.
Yeah, it's a great question. That's from Ralph. Thanks, Ralph.
To be honest, I think of the list, I would say Solana is probably the only one, at least in my opinion, that is now on the same, as in the same kind of caliber conversation as ETH. And this is not to say, again, that bearish Bitcoin, bearish ETH, bullish Solana. It's more just about relative performance and what you've seen, what's been built in Solana, on Solana, what that ecosystem has done over the last 12 to 18 months, the amount of now on-chain activity that you're seeing there across centralized exchanges, right? So actual trading volume. This whole, again, kind of meme coin craze, for better or worse, really started and arguably ended on Solana itself because of the fast, cheap, and better user experience that that blockchain does offer. So it differentiates itself in a number of ways, and I think has gotten to a point where it's pretty much solidified itself. If you think last cycle was, first cycle was kind of Bitcoin, right? And then last cycle was more BTC, ETH, and SOL was around towards the tail end of it, but I think got a little too high too quick and there wasn't a ton built. This cycle is kind of the Bitcoin, ETH, SOL cycle, mm-hmm. if you want to think about it like that. Again, not to say there aren't other protocols that are doing some really tremendous things. I just think in terms of current adoption and what we've seen and how battle-tested all these protocols have been, I would say those three are the ones who have really solidified themselves.
Yeah. Feel like we need like a whiteboard with all of that, what's going on, because it's so interesting and people kind of throw them around, and I don't think we sort of understand those different protocols. But, you know, they just seem like cryptocurrencies that we think are like the dollar, but it's so much more complicated than that. Ched asking, earlier today, Raul and Roger, when we had a workshop about retirement, talking about passive income, and the consensus with that was that rentals suck. I think they mean real estate rentals. Do you have any thoughts on staking income via either ETH or SOL becoming structural narratives in the next few years?
Yeah, it's a really good question. One interesting thing on the ETH side is TBD on when we potentially get an ETH spot ETF,
yeah,
right?
SEC seemed to throw cold water on it, but some people think they're going to have to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
right?
And some of my ex-colleagues at Bloomberg Intelligence, Eric Balchunas, James Seyfert, who have now become, they kind of became these crypto rock stars in a sense, because they were the guys who were tweeting about the Bitcoin ETFs before their approval. I chat with James quite often, and he tweets a lot of his thoughts publicly, which is great. I think the general consensus is that is a back half of the year at the earliest type of
inevitable.
I think inevitable, because a lot of the same reasons why you could approve something like Bitcoin. I mean, you can make very similar arguments for ETH. To the point about staking yield, what's interesting is now some of these potential ETF applications, the issuers have actually come out and updated how they're going to, and if they're going to wind up staking the ETH that is put into that spot ETF, and basically allow ETF holders to participate in the upside of the yield that you'd be getting from that staked ETH, which I think is really interesting. It's kind of like an ETH-based, you know, money market fund in a certain sense. I think what's really important, though, about understanding crypto staking is when you stake something like ETH, you're getting paid that yield in that currency, right? Or whatever it is, the asset that it's denominated in. So you could look at let's say an ETH staking yield was 4 or 5% annually. That's not the same as saying I'm locking up my US dollars in a 10-year treasury bond and getting, you know, 4 or 5% annually. If ETH price doubles, then the amount of yield that you're getting, if you're thinking about this on a dollar basis, obviously goes up. If it falls quite considerably, you basically can wipe out that entire, the entire yield side of that. So it's always something that's important to understand about staking is, especially when you're getting paid in the native asset, you are taking on
the risk, the underlying risk.
That, exactly.
Very important, because I don't think that's always clear to people, especially when we're talking about passive income. And Chen, you may know that, but other people listening to that question may not know that. So it's super important to make that distinction.
But it's a great way with, if you are, say, structurally, you know, bullish on some type of asset, right? Let's use ETH as the example. It's obviously a great way for you to maintain your underlying exposure and then just earn more of that asset on top of it, right? But it is very much, it comes with the same type of risk as the underlying, for sure.
This is sort of a left field question, but I got someone direct messaged me this the other day when we were coming up on this series. Any idea what's happening with some of the payment companies? Like, we know Block and Jack Dorsey very into crypto. We kind of haven't heard anything happening with any of that. Do you have any intel or any knowledge about what's happening with payments and why it's been so quiet?
Yeah, no. So the short answer is no. I do.
I thought
think
it was a great question, though, because
really
I've been
one,
wondering about it as well, especially Block.
And there's been some speculation around X, for example, going to add payments, and some people, I think Raul's actually mentioned this, about, you know, them potentially integrating not only stable coins, but something like Doge, right?
Yeah.
Which could give it
completely
a whole,
speculative, by the way.
Extremely speculative. But I think what's interesting about kind of going down that line of thought is, you know, you have chains like Solana, like we were just talking about, that when it comes to things like payments and even micropayments, which is an area that I think is underappreciated potentially for the long-term use case of this technology and Solana potentially being at the forefront of it. It's an area where a lot of these credit card companies, for example, payment companies won't necessarily touch because the economics don't actually make sense for them, right? But what that would require is basically one of these big companies to come out. I think we've had Visa and a couple others that have started to partner with some of these crypto or blockchain firms that are kind of behind some of these protocols to try and figure out how to make that happen. So I think that's an area that will gain, when it comes and when these companies come in, will gain more and more prominence. But I don't know what the timeline on that is.
Yeah,
completely frank.
It's interesting. You got to think there's stuff going on, but it's you know, we just don't see it yet.
Yeah.
It's got to be top of mind for them. I would think there'd have to be a lot of synergies. As we start to wrap things up, so we've been talking a lot about crypto. You're young. We've been talking about retirement. Your risk profile's probably higher than some watching. I don't know.
A little bit.
Are you mostly invested in all digital assets? Do you have any traditional assets that you look at? How are you thinking about the space?
Yeah, for me personally, I am primarily in the crypto and digital asset space.
Walking the walk.
I'm fortunate enough to where my wife works for Bloomberg. She's a product manager there. She's got a great job. She's kind of the stable one of our family. She's contributing to her 401k. She's doing all the right things. I'm kind of the high beta, high risk, out of the money kind of call option on if this works, it works and it's great. But no, it's a personal anecdote because if I didn't have that, I probably honestly would be, my risk profile would be a bit different. One thing I will say as we kind of wrap is really good advice for any type of investor or any type of cycle or market environment you're in is always remembering it's all about how much you keep, not necessarily how much you make, right? And what I mean by that is on paper, you know, you could look at your portfolio balance tomorrow and, you know, be extremely excited, but those kind of paper gains, unrealized gains, and then when you take into consideration things like taxes, especially if you're, you know, US based, it's really boils down to how much you're able to keep, right? And preserve and grow over time. And so I've always told, you know, my friends who've gotten into this, who maybe aren't the most investment savvy, right? They're in other careers. There are times where it's appropriate to, you know, take some off the table, put that into, you know, a money market fund or something, like put that aside so that you're okay, especially when it comes to crypto, not putting in, you know, getting over your skis, not putting in anything you can't afford to lose, because volatility always cuts both ways, right? If you want that upside outperformance, potential volatility, you also have to take the downside, you know, potential risk that's associated with it.
Absolutely. That's why you have to have discipline. You have to have a framework.
Yep.
You have to have a plan. You can't just sort of shoot from the hip. We talk
Absolutely.
About that all the time when we're doing stuff. That's why we have the academy. That's why we lean into education. And we're super psyched that you're in the marketplace to help people along.
Yeah, we couldn't be more excited either. Yep.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Well, this has been super fun. We've got, as I mentioned, a lot more talking to do here for an event. But we just wanted to thank all of you for helping make the Daily Briefing so special and kept us going for this long. We wouldn't be here without you, especially the regulars who are in the chat every day. You're a fantastic community and we just adore you and the people behind the scenes who make it happen. Why don't you guys get in here? These are the magicians who get the show on air from the pandemic, from their homes, from remotely. Caputo, Pete, Gabrielle, Nick, Super Mario is back there. Ash, Super Mario has to keep this thing on air. But hey, cheers to you guys. You guys are the ones who make it happen every day. Cheers. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.
It's Wednesday, June 3rd, 2020, just after market close in London. This is the Real Vision Daily Briefing. I'm Ash Bennington from New York, joined shortly by Roger Hurst from the UK. But first, Nick Correa with some additional stories.
One day you're going to have to show that with you doing that and me help try hard not to piss my sides at the... It's the Daily Briefing. Dun, dun, dun. Bum, bum, bum. You being serious and me at the other side.
By the way, in that 30 years of history on the Fed, unlike your plumber, I'm not going to show you my butt crack either.
All shook up. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm all shook up.
Not only is he an epic trader, but he's also a crooner and a karaoke king.
You know, trading is what we do. It's not all we are.
Does global war destroy or delay more cowbell? Surely if there's a global war, you don't worry about fiscal stimulus.
Tony, fantastic stuff. Listen, let's go Yankees, baby. Hopefully we gave him some good luck. This beer's
for you. Want to talk about baseball now? You can't hang up. We're not hanging up. They've scored 3 runs.
You have to hang up, Tony.
I'm superstitious.
You have to get on the horn and tell them.
What are you doing this weekend?
And with that, I'll send it back to you, Ed.
La 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 la.
Crypto corner, crypto corner.
Ice cream solves everything.
Hi, I'm Raoul Pal. On the 5th and 6th of June, 2024, I'll be speaking at the largest AI event in Asia, Super AI, in Singapore, at the iconic Marina Bay Sands. Alongside brilliant minds like Edward Snowden, Benedict Evans, and Balaji, I'll be on stage exploring the extraordinary potential of AI and the profound change it represents, not just for financial markets, but also for the world as we know it. With over 5,000 attendees and over 150 side events, Singapore will become a vibrant AI hub for a full week from the 3rd to the 9th of June. So visit realvision.com/superAI to register and join me with 20% off tickets with the code REALVISION. The link's in the description.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.